Well, we all fly a lot. And the miracle of flying, we are in a plane which is 500,000 kilograms of metal in the air. How does it stay in the air? But when they make the safety announcement, none of us are listening. When they tell us to look around for the nearest exit rows, none of us look around. And when they tell us to put our phones on flight mode, I'm pretty sure most of us here are not bothering to put our planes on flight mode. Because we're all thinking of the same thing. It's the air safety announcement. We've heard it so many times before. Why do I have to listen? What are they going to tell me that I possibly need to know? But earlier this year in America, Southwest Airlines, this year, flying from Dallas to New York, had to make an emergency landing. One of the engines blew up. A bit of shrapnel went into the window, killed one passenger, decompressed the cabin. They had to make an emergency landing. And the footage shows that everyone, the oxygen mask really did drop down. Everyone in the picture, they have their masks on wrongly. Have a look. They have it over their mouth when we know you gotta have it on your over your nose. So everyone put it on the wrong way. The air safety announcement. What do they tell me that I possibly need to know? Well, it's the same with Christmas. Because we're thinking, oh, don't tell me it's Christmas again. I've heard it so many times before. Baby Jesus, born in a manger, there are lambs, there are cows, there are goats, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it so many times before. What are they going to tell me that I haven't heard before? Why do I need to listen to the Christmas message? So today, I'm going to give you the Christmas message, and it's called this, the three shocking facts about Christmas they don't want you to know. It's shameless clickbait, but the third one will surprise you the most. So we're ready for the three shocking facts of Christmas. This is shocking fact number one. Because of Christmas, you and I have way more dignity than we dared imagine. Number one, because of Christmas, you and I have way more dignity than we dared imagine. This is the poo emoji. And if you're from America, it's the poop emoji. And it's an official part of the emoji lexicon. It's got its own Unicode now, so it'll work on all devices. And it's endearing, isn't it? Because it's a pile of poo, but it has a cute smiley face. And that's the dissonance, because there's nothing smiley about poo. Poo is disgusting, and there's something very uncomfortable and undignified about poo. If you go to Japan, you know that their toilet seats are very high tech, and they have these controls that do everything. And if you see at the top, there's a button you push that plays music, so that when you're doing your business, people can't hear you doing your business, because there's something very undignified about doing a poo. I work one day a week as a doctor, and us doctors and nurses, we can handle everything. Brain, blood, vomit, but when there's a poo, whoa, we run for cover. And the most junior person in the pecking order, that's the one who has to clean up the poo, because there's something very undignified about poo. But at the original Christmas, baby Jesus comes to us, born in a manger, surrounded by poo from animals, and in his own poo. Think about it. The second person of the Trinity, the Son of God, comes to be one of us, the highest person in the pecking order, and he comes to our level of dignity, saying to us, we are dignified. We have our dignity no matter what stage or state of life we find ourselves in. When I was a father to three young boys, I used to have to change their nappies, and that is something I never got used to. But I used to cheer myself up, because when I changed the nappies, I used to say to them, now, just remember, one day you're going to be doing this for me. And that's the sad truth. It's funny, but it's sad at the same time. Because right now, medically speaking, one in two of us in this room will end life with Alzheimer's in a nursing home, not remembering who we are, in nappies. And the other one in two of us, we have to care for that other person. So I'm married, and I used to play a lot of rugby. I used to get a lot of head knocks, a lot of concussions. So I know which one out of the two I'm going to be. So I'm taking one for the team there. I'm the one that's going to get Alzheimer's. But there's something very reassuring that Jesus came to be one of us. He came as a baby, covered in his own poo, not talking, not walking. And that's where we're going to be in life as well, because my grandmother ended her life not talking. My grandfather ended his life not walking. And I'm going to end my life covered in my own poo. And baby Jesus saying, that's okay. There is dignity in that. There is dignity in being a human being, no matter what state or stage of life we find ourselves in. That's shocking fact number one. Now, shocking fact number two is this. Shocking fact number two is this. There is such a thing as evil. Evil really is a thing. Now, this is a picture of my family. That's my wife, Stephanie. I have three young boys, Toby, Cooper, and Jonty, age 11, 9, and 7. This is them at a wedding recently. And as you can see, they are high fun, high energy. And one night, it was my turn to put them to bed. So I read them a bedtime story, put them to bed. And then at 10 o'clock at night, they came to my bed and said, Dad, we can't fall asleep. Can you please read us another bedtime story? And I said to them, oh, I can do better than that. And I pulled out my laptop and I said, let me introduce you to the wonderful world of professional wrestling. So we started watching YouTube clips of WWE, and they had never seen anything like this before. So I started saying to them, hey, this is them coming off the ropes. This is them. This is John Cena. He's one of the good guys. And this is the Undertaker. He's one of the bad guys. And we're watching one of these games, and then suddenly we could hear his ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. The whole bed was shaking like there was an earthquake. And you could just hear the noise of the bed hitting the wall. Gun, 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 gun. And my oldest son, Toby, says to me, Dad, what is that? And I turned around and I said, I think it's your youngest brother, Jonty, shaking. And little Jonty, who was only age 7, was just shaking with so much adrenaline because he was so buzzed by the pro wrestling. But afterwards, I had to tell them, oh, guys, I don't want to break it to you, but it's all fake. It's not real. They're not really hurting each other. They're not really punching each other. The good guys really aren't that good, and the bad guys aren't that bad. It's all make-believe. And you know, for a long time, that's what we told ourselves about each other. You know what? There's no such thing as evil. Evil is a social, religious construct. But in the end, we're all just good people. We might make some bad decisions, but we're good people, so we can all get along. And so when I hear the Christmas story about King Herod and how he had to kill all the babies because he was so worried that Jesus would grow up to become a king, I hear that and think, oh, that didn't really happen. That's just part of the fairy story of Christmas. That's just make-believe. That didn't really happen. But then just this year, I went on a trip to Israel, and they showed me that King Herod really, really was that bad. He was a megalomaniac, this psychopathic megalomaniac, and he'll build all these monuments himself. So this is Herodium, basically a man-made mountain, and it was a fortress, it was a palace, and in the end, it's where he got buried. And when he died, he killed his own sons to make sure they wouldn't get his throne. He really was a bad person. And from that, I learned, you know what? King Herod really was a bad person. Evil really is real. I lived in America when the 9/11 attacks happened. And that shook us, because up until then, we didn't think evil really was a thing. And Time magazine, on the back page in the essay, Lance Morrow wrote an article, this is evil. We have to call this for what it is. It is evil. And the same thing happened with the Bali bombings. And recently with the shootings in the synagogue, we realized, no, evil really is real. It's a thing. People do evil things. But here's the problem. We told ourselves there was no such thing as evil and that we're all good so we can all get along. But if evil is really a thing, this means this turns us back into the whole us versus them. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. How can we get along then? Well, this brings us to shocking fact number three. And the shocking fact number three is this. The line between good and evil runs through our own hearts. Many years ago, I was in Africa on some medical mission thing. And in Africa, there's so many mosquitoes and there's malaria from the mosquitoes. You're meant to sleep in a bed with a mosquito tent. And you're meant to try, when you go to bed at night, to crawl into the mosquito net almost like seamlessly to make sure the mosquitoes don't get in there with you. Well, one night, I crawled into my bed, pulled the netting around me, and you can see all the mosquitoes on the outside trying to get in, and right above my face, on the outside of the net, was a big African hairy spider the size of my face. But I thought, all right, just be chill. He's on the outside. Trust your netting. He's more afraid of you than you are of him. And I relaxed and had a good night's sleep. The next night I went to bed. There he was again, just above my face. And I thought, it's all right. Just be chill. He's on the outside. Trust your netting. He's more afraid of you than you are of him. Next night I go to bed. There he is again, above my face. And I thought, it's all right. Be chill. He's on the outside. Trust your netting. He's more afraid of you than you are of him. And finally, the next day, my roommate says to me, oh, Sam, how do you put up with that spider on your net? And I said, oh, it's all right. He's on the outside. And my roommate said, no, he's not. He's on the inside. And we both had a good look. And da-da-da-da, he really was. He was on the inside. What I thought was out there was in here. And that's the whole premise of the scary movie, When a Stranger Calls. You know the scary movie where the killer calls a phone, the babysitter picks it up, and we think the killer is on the outside of the house, but suddenly, ba-ba-ba-ba, we find out, no, the killer is inside the house. Well, that's the Christmas message. What we think is out there actually might be inside all of us. This is Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a famous writer. He won a Nobel Prize. Time Person of the Year, I think. And you probably know him because he used to be a Soviet patriot, fought for the Soviet army. But just because he said one or two things about Stalin that Stalin didn't like, Stalin locked him up in a concentration camp, a gulag, in the harsh Siberian countryside. And it was such a harsh prison camp that people would freeze, starve, or were beaten to death. And Solzhenitsyn grew to hate the guards, his captors, because they were very cruel people, and people would die on their watch. And suddenly Solzhenitsyn had this moment where he thought, hang on, they are no different from me, and I am no different from them. It's just a matter of circumstances. If the circumstances were just switched around, I would be the same as them. I am one of them, and they are one of me. And he has gone on to write one of the most famous quotes. And the quote from Solzhenitsyn is this: the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. Meaning the evil's not out there. It's actually inside all of us, in our own hearts. And Jesus, in the Bible, would agree. Because Jesus goes on to have that famous saying that says, why do you notice the speck of dirt in your brother's eye, but you don't notice the plank of wood that's in your own eye? Meaning you're worse than what you see out there. The evil begins here, not out there. But then I would say to Jesus, oh, but Jesus, I have never stolen anything. But Jesus, in one of his sermons, would say, yeah, but in your heart, you've envied what your friends have, haven't you? And then I would tell Jesus, but I've never killed anyone. But Jesus would say, yeah, but in your heart, you have a grudge, don't you? And I would say, but I've never cheated on my wife. And Jesus says, yeah, but in your heart, you've looked at other women, haven't you? In other words, the line between good and evil begins right here in our own hearts. And we're all rediscovering this now. This is Jonathan Haidt. Oh, can you click it one more for me, please? Thanks. One more. Yeah, this is Jonathan Haidt. He's a liberal, secular, atheist Jew. He's a psychologist. And this is his book, The Coddling of the American Mind. It's only just come out 1 or 2 years ago. And he says the same thing. Right now, we're tearing ourselves apart with all these witch hunts, looking for evil and shame in other people, creating these us versus them groups. When he says, and he quotes Solzhenitsyn, when we need to realize, hang on, the line between good and evil begins in our own hearts. And this is David Brooks, columnist for the New York Times. This article just came out in October this year, The New Cold War. And David Brooks is saying right now in the West, we have so much partisanship now. It's left versus right. You know, Republicans versus the Democrats, liberals versus the conservatives. We're tearing ourselves apart with this partisanship. The only way we can solve partisanship is to realize, hang on, the evil's not out there. It begins here. We're all the same. We're not good people. We're actually good and bad people. And that's the message of Christmas. Because when Jesus was born, the angels announced to the parents, you are to give the name Jesus. Why? Because he will save his people from their sins. In the end, Christmas is about this. Jesus came to be one of us, not just to be a good teacher. He was that, but much more. Not just to be a drinking buddy. He was that, but much more. But in the end, he came to save us from ourselves, from our sins. Now, on the one hand, this is very humbling to hear. What? I need saving? But at the same time, it's very empowering to know we can be saved. And that's the whole message of Christmas. So, what are the three shocks of Christmas? Number one, that we have way more dignity than we dared imagine. Jesus came to be one of us. So no matter what stage or state of life we find ourselves in, there is dignity. Number two, there is such a thing as evil. But number three, the line between good and evil begins in our own hearts. It's not out there. It's inside all of us. And Jesus came to save us from that. Now, I work one day a week as a doctor. And I work as a surgical assistant. The surgical assistant, what I do is I hold the leg for the surgeon while they operate on it. So imagine a mechanic, if they change the oil on your car, they need an assistant to hold the bonnet up. Well, when the surgeon operates on your leg, they need me to hold the leg. And so the nurses, they look at the surgeon and think, wow, I can see how that would take 6 years of med school. Then they look at the anaesthetist and they go, whoa, I can see how that would take 6 years of med school. And then they look at me holding the leg and they think, how does that take 6 years of med school? A trained blind monkey could do what he does and probably do it better. And that's actually why I go to work every day, to make sure they don't find out how much better it went without me. I said, whoa, that went way better without an assistant. Why do we need an assistant? Remind me again. Well, just earlier this year, I thought I'd go to my own surgeon, get my knee operated on for an elective knee surgery. And I get up there, and professional courtesy, I'm the doctor, they put me at the start of the list, so then I don't have to fast for as long, and then I can go home before it's lunchtime. So I'm there lying in bed, waiting to be operated on in all my patient gear, and there's a surgeon, there's the anaesthetist, there are all the nurses lined up, and someone said, where's the assistant? And everyone laughs, oh, he's in the bed. But the surgeon goes, no, I got a replacement. But half an hour later, the replacement had not turned up. He'd forgotten. So the surgeon says to me, Sam, you know what you're going to have to do. So I had to get out of the bed, take off my patient gear, put on my doctor gear, work as a doctor for the whole shift, you know, while fasting, kneel by mouth, jump into the bed, and they operated on me, and they kept me awake, and they kept putting all these drugs into me to see what would happen, and they were filming me and watching my heart rate to see, oh, yeah, that one worked. Yeah, that one didn't work so well. And it was all fun and games, but after the operation, a few weeks later, I got a knee infection. So I had to go back to hospital, and the knee didn't get better. And I was in denial because I didn't cancel any work engagements. I'm thinking, it's just an infected knee. It'll get better. And it didn't get better. And I kept getting worse and worse. And they took me for another operation, wash out the knee. I didn't get better. And for a long time, I was in denial. Like, I even took a gate pass. I went out, tried to give a talk while I was all infected. And the knee blew up like a watermelon. And suddenly I was, whoa, I really, really am sick. And so I end up in hospital for 16 days, which I had not planned on. I wasn't even planning on one day, but I was in there for 16 days. And when it was all over, I had lost 5 kilograms of weight, which was all the muscle in the leg. It was just a stick, like a toothpick, and I couldn't bend it. And I'm thinking, I'm 52. I might not be able to bend this leg again. But with physio, you know, I've come back to where I was before. But I describe it as like you're falling down a hole, but you don't know where the bottom is going to be. And then when you hit the bottom, suddenly you doubt you can climb back out. But at the same time, they say you actually can't climb back out until you realize you are in a hole. And for a long time, I was in denial. Nah, I'm all right. Nah, it'll get better. It was only when I realized, no, I'm not all right, that began the journey to recovery. And the message of Christmas is this. You and I have way more dignity than we dared imagine. But at the same time, we have to be humble enough to admit, you know what? We're way more fallen and broken and maybe even evil than we dare admit. But Jesus came to save us. And if we trust him, love him, and follow him on this message, there's way more hope than what we could possibly dream of. Thanks.